to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and all that. Produced, posted, and hosted by people in recovery who have strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, mice and rats, and all the creatures in between, welcome to the Most High Show. I'm your host, Sarah with an H, and joining me tonight in the decadent seats of service, we have Peyton and Jack. We've had people share their stories on the show before, but tonight is a special edition. Before we get too far, however, I do want to let you all know there may be sensitive topics outside of addiction discussed tonight. These topics may not be suitable for all listeners. So if you need to tune away for this episode, we understand, and we will catch you on the next one. So here we have tonight is a father-daughter duo that helped make up a family in recovery. Peyton just celebrated 1 year of recovery. Phenomenal. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And Jack, you have 30 years. Is that correct?
Correct.
Awesome. Thank you guys for joining us tonight to share your story.
Thank you for having us.
So Peyton, why don't you tell us a little bit about what it was like just growing up with sober parents?
I would say, honestly, like, I think my childhood was normal, you know? I used to pride myself on the fact that, like, I remember vividly being in fourth grade, and I was the only child whose parents were still together. My parents, like, everyone else's parents were divorced, and I was like, oh my God. We went to, like, baseball games with brothers and travel baseball. I did competitive cheerleading. I was really good in school. Like, my relationship with my parents was phenomenal. My mom showed up for all my competition cheerleading events, and we all showed up to my brother's games as a family. My dad coached, and it was very much like a typical American dream white picket fence family, to be honest with you. And I always felt personally like I had to, like, try harder than other people to be like part of the popular crowd, or to be liked, or to be pretty, or to just, like, have a normal conversation. I always felt weird. Like, I just, it's so hard to explain, but I just never felt like I was like everybody else.
Do you think that was because of, like, having parents who weren't out partying? Like, maybe, I mean, I know when I was growing up, it was like I wasn't allowed at some people's houses because I was like, oh, their parents drink and they don't do it right.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, maybe a little bit now that you mention it. I think a lot of, because I was a cheerleader, so a lot of the girls, their parents would party and they would drink and all that other stuff, and my parents didn't do any of that. So I think it was, I didn't really have a lot to relate to, right? And, like, I've known ever since I was a little girl that both my parents are drug addicts and alcoholics. I've known that. So I think that I just felt very different because no one else understood that, and I could never have conversations about that kind of stuff. Like, no one understood. I didn't even understand, really. But I just could never relate to anybody, and I never felt seen and never felt heard. The only time that I ever felt seen and heard was academically. Mm-hmm. Even, like, doing cheerleading, I wasn't very good. I really wasn't. Like, but I enjoyed it because it got me out of myself. It got me, like, I was a part of a team. I was a part of something. I was able to, like, contribute to something and feel like my role was necessary. Mm-hmm. I felt like I was needed.
So the recovery aspect wasn't something that you shielded from your kids? Like, you were open about that from pretty young?
Thanks for having us, by the way. No, we were open as it was appropriate to their age. Right. So we didn't, it was appropriate because something had to be said because we went to meetings all the time, you know? But we shared, I don't know how to answer that. What's your memory of that?
I honestly don't have a lot of memories from my childhood besides like the typical American dream family. To be honest with you, I remember, like, my dad always planting seeds in my brain. I remember, like, I would come to him with an issue, and he would always, I used to get, you know exactly what I'm about to say. I would get so mad because I would always, like, I would get really, really upset as a child. Like, if something happened, I would just get, like, super emotional about it, and I would get really into my head, and I've just always been very emotional. So I'd come to my father about it, and I would just complain about a lot of things, and my dad would offer me a solution right off the bat. always solution all the time. And it got to a point to where when I was older that I was like, why won't you just let me be mad? Why won't you just let me be sad? Like, I want to feel these emotions. Like, what is, like, what's wrong with you? You know what I'm saying? Like, you're so positive. You're so happy. Like, I don't understand. And then it got to a point to where my dad started asking me, like, do you want to like live in the problem or do you want to like stay in the solution? You know what I'm saying? And I remember one time I was, had like this really close friend and I needed to stop being friends with her after some traumatic events happened that we'll get into later. But I wrote a letter breaking up our friendship basically. And no, I think what it was for me as a child was that a lot of families were not as emotionally in tune as our family was. When we were younger, we would go in the living room before like going to school and we would do this thing called I'm excited. You know what I'm saying? Like we spent a lot of time together as a family. We'd blow up the air mattress and watch Lord of the Rings and Indiana Jones and Harry Potter all day long. We'd go to the movies together. Like we were just really, really, really close. And I think I don't even remember the first time we had a conversation about you being in recovery or mom for that matter. I remember you telling me that you used to carry me in like a baby carrier to meetings and stuff like that. And I did go to the 2015 convention at the Mercedes-Benz Stadium.
Yes.
Before I got sober, which was really cool. But I really don't remember.
Yeah, I guess that just like I said, it's appropriate. I mean, my story, if I were to tell the down and dirty of my story, that's nothing needs to be shared with a 12-year-old.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But hey, your mom and dad, you know, we don't drink because we react differently to alcohol.
Yeah.
You know, so we don't drink and to stay, to be good parents, you know, and try to be good people. We do these things a couple, three times a week. We go out and that's also the time it's date night for mom and dad. Oh, okay. That's cool. You know, they understood that. And as they got older, you know, we would disclose a little bit more as they became a little more mature. Right? I was very conscious of the fact, you know, that not to, you know, incestual abuse, right? Like it put things on them that they shouldn't know.
You know? Not like, you know, baby's first word is dada. And then it's like, yes, Andy's a drug addict.
Yes.
Good job.
Yes.
Baby.
Yay. Yeah,
but it was interesting that, you know, and I remember it really well, her baby carrier, you know, bringing her into meetings when she was, you know, like 6 months old or whatever. It was pretty amazing. And they went to a couple of big events as they were younger too. So she was sober for like 13 years before she knew it. I don't know.
Before I wasn't sober anymore.
Right. Yeah. When sometimes it's like, yeah, she just celebrated 6 months sobriety, you know, and she's on like in her little carrier, you know.
Just for reference, that means Goo Goo Gaga. That doesn't mean meth.
She's playing with her toys and her little, what do you call those things? I can't remember now. When you carry a baby around in the car seat that turns into a bucket, you carry your baby around it.
Turns into a bucket?
Yeah, whatever. It's a bucket. A baby bucket. What do you call those things?
I mean, I think it's just a car seat.
It's called a car seat.
Yeah. Right. All car seats have the baby handle.
Yeah, and you can take it out of the car and you transport them.
Yeah, so when it's in a car, it's a car seat. Outside the car, it's a baby bucket.
Exactly.
I knew
there was something for it.
I knew. I was so mentally deranged the minute that my head hit the bucket.
If my family didn't think I already had weird enough opinions on baby things, wait till they hear about baby bucket.
Peyton brought up a good point, and I'm glad that you did. So she would come to me with, and I would listen to her, right? You know, and I hate to say this, but I would validate her. I'd see you're hurting, you know, like that. And I would listen to her and let her, but I tried from an early age to say, let's get into the solution, right? What's the solution here? Mm-hmm. And try to tell and ask her what it is rather than tell her, because that's how we learn, right? By doing. And if I keep telling her that, I mean, that's my take on teaching anyway. But we're also an emotional family. I'm more emotional than your mom.
Yeah, very.
Yeah, I'm very emotional.
She's like, no, I already knew that.
Yeah. 100%, 1,000%.
So they weren't sequestering emotions or the expression of, and we made it a point, especially with Peyton, the honey badger, we used to call her.
Oh God.
To not feel like her she matters and what she says matters. Express yourself. Get out there and express yourself. Ask questions. We used to call her the question machine.
And honey badger.
And the honey badger.
Go ahead.
She, you know, and all kids ask questions, right? But she's like a pit bull, right? Why? But why? And then dig deeper and deeper and deeper. It's like 3 years old. She wants to know how, you know, an engine works in a car or whatever it is. It's like, it just goes on and on and on and on. And when she wants something, Like, would she want something? Just give in and just give it to her because she's a badger, a honey badger. You ever see a honey badger?
I couldn't even tell you what one looks like.
Okay, a honey badger is a tenacious, vicious, never give up, ever, under any circumstances, no obstacles too large that I can't get over critter.
1,000%.
Yeah, and it looks like a badger in a... Like a
little tiny chihuahua had a baby.
Yeah, and it's ugly. It's vicious.
They're ugly creatures, man.
They fight pythons.
Man, look.
They're bad. Bad at.
So, Peyton, when was the first time you fought a python?
I mean, honestly, she was probably when I came out the womb.
Yeah, she was a honey badger. And we call it the honey badger all the time. Honey badgers don't give a shit.
Honey badgers don't care.
Honey badgers don't care.
So, it was like this running joke whenever, like, people would come over. Unbeknownst to me at the time, but obviously later on, now that I'm older, I know, but like a lot of their friends were sober as well. They'd come over, like we'd have like dinner night and stuff like that. They would show this video to everybody. There's this fucking, right. Sorry, there's this freaking honey badger video that's like, honey badger don't care, honey badger don't care. And I remember being so livid. Okay. And I'm like, that's not me. I don't do that. And then 5 minutes later, I'm like, daddy, can I please have a candy bar? And my daddy says no. I said, okay. And then I go ask my mom, daddy said I can have a candy bar.
Oh, that's like, that manipulation.
That manipulation started real young.
I did the same thing.
Oh my God.
It was mom first and then, mom said no. 10.
Yes. Yes. It was, one thing's for sure, two things for certain. I always got what I wanted and when I wanted it, how I wanted it. It didn't matter what I had to do to get it. And that's, I mean, honestly, and that trait has carried me on until I got sober. Honestly.
Yeah. So people often say, like, you know, there's a lot of discussion around how addiction begins, you know, like how it is, is it something that, you know, is it biological? Is it nurture? Is it like, what is it? And so, and a lot of people are like, oh, well, environment, when you don't have, you know, when you are denied, you know, being able to talk about your emotions, when you're denied certain pieces of your existence, you know, it's like, then, you know, it's an easy path into addiction, but you grew up with like emotionally stable parents who encouraged you to talk about your emotions and, you know, had, you know, the life you described as a family unit growing up, spending time together, quality time together, you know, that's not something you hear very often. And so how did you go from like that almost idealistic environment, like the I wish my family was like that. And then you still found that path into addiction. Where did that start?
I'm trying to think about my answers before I say them.
I don't know. I like when you're off the cuff. It's been very entertaining.
Yeah, we witnessed that like an hour and a half, haven't we? Yeah.
I would say that I was very curious. I was like, I wanted to understand, like, okay, mom and dad don't drink. Mom and dad don't do like anything. Like, they're not the fun, whatever parents, you know. Like, I was curious. I wanted to know. And I think not only that too, but like when the first time I ever did drugs, I snorted hydros and oxys and I was in one of my girlfriend's house at the time. And I just like something, I don't even know how to describe it. Like something switched to me and I was just like, I'm going to do this. Like I want to do this. Like it wasn't even like a peer pressure thing. Yeah. It was like, I want to do this and I'm going to do this. That's the honey badger mode coming again, honestly. And I remember doing that for the first time and being like, oh, brother, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I was like, this is it. You know, I remember like vividly that flip switched, even though I got sick, even though it was weird and I felt like all different types of things. I was like, this is what I want. This is what I want. And then from that, like it progressed to weed and I started smoking like every day all the time. And it kind of just... At first, it was a social thing.
Like, what age were you, like, when you started?
15.
So 15 was the hydros and the oxys.
Yeah, 15 was the hydros and the oxys. And then I got raped when I was 15. Mm. And that was, like, a whole thing. I was at a party, and I was definitely not sober at all. And there's this one person, like, long story short, this person wanted to have sex with me, and I was like, no. And then my friend, who I thought was my friend, he was like, I'll protect you. I'll keep you safe. Mm. He did the exact opposite. And from that moment, after that, like, I first of all, I didn't even understand. I was 15 years old. I did not understand even what was like happening. And I didn't understand that it was rape. And then I was also seeing a counselor at that time, which honestly, I don't even know why I was seeing a counselor at that time. I think, oh, okay. I remember I was having like suicidal ideations and I could not, but it was like, looking back on it now, it doesn't make any sense. I don't really understand why I was having suicidal ideations before I even started doing, like, I even like did hydros or oxys the first time. I remember just, I just felt weird and different.
That's the fun part of mental illness.
Yes, yes. Snap
it doesn't
illness.
Need a reason.
Yes.
That fun twist.
Oh, right. Boy. And I was like, I went and talked to my counselor. She's like, honey, that's rape. And I'm like, no, it's not. And I was terrified to tell my parents because I knew that my dad would go ballistic and he would try to kill this person. Mm. So long story short, she's like, by law, we have to tell. And so my mom and dad came and it's all a blur that like what happened in that point. But I can't remember if I told them or if the counselor told them. Do you remember? I told you, or the counselor told you.
You did.
And so then I couldn't go to school for like 2 weeks because this person was at the school and people were bullying me, telling me that I'm a bitch that wants to ruin people's lives. And I was like getting harassed and he was just really, really bad bullying. And I just like didn't leave my house for like 2 weeks, pretty much. And I did not want to go to court over it. And my dad told me that I had to. And in hindsight, looking back, it was the best decision. But in the moment, I was like, my life is never going to be the same. I will never have any friends anymore. Like, the church that I was going to banned him from the church. So I stopped going to church. And I just, like, lost all sense of who I was. I had I didn't feel like a person anymore.
It's almost like the real life version of that novel Speak.
Yes.
Which is really sad because it's like novels like that get written because there's stories like that way too often, mm-hmm. you know? And I'm sorry that that's something that you had to go through at such a young age. I mean, period, but especially at such a young age.
I appreciate you saying that. And I will say this might be a hot topic, but I've been raped 3 times and everything that's ever happened to me, everything that I've ever gone through, I'm grateful for it because it made me the woman that I am today.
Yeah.
I'm grateful for every drug that I ever did. I'm grateful for every drink that I ever took. I'm grateful for every experience that I've ever had because if not, then I wouldn't be sitting here today.
No, I you understand know what I mean? That. Yeah. My rape count used to be my icebreaker when I met new people. So
I get that. It's the dark humor coming out. Like,
it's like you can't make me uncomfortable if I make you uncomfortable.
Exactly. And it's also like I'm blessed because now I get to talk about it. I get to be open about it. Mm-hmm. You know, and I get to share my experience with other women and men too, because this happens to a lot of men and they don't talk about it. And this happens to so many people. And it breaks my heart. And so I am like, I'm transparent about it. I'm open about it, you know?
Yeah. And there's a difference with that openness with intention of like, now I can help with, instead of being like open about it because it's like the shock value. Right. It's like, I don't know what to do with this information. So here
you go. Here's my
you
life and my trauma.
Figure it out.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I think, so there was a court case and everything. And then honestly, all that entire year of my life is a blur. My mom wasn't in recovery at that time. And in that same year, she was no longer in recovery. So that was like a big, it felt like my whole life was imploding before me. And I had no idea what the hell to do about it. So I was like, well, I know that all these drugs that I was doing worked. So I'm going to just keep doing that.
Yeah.
And so I started like smoking every day. I got back into drinking. I got into, not back into, but I got into drinking. And I started surrounding myself with only people that did the same things that I did, meaning drugs. And I got really involved heavily with a lot of men and I realized now through lots of therapy and counseling and through getting sober and doing the program that I choose to do that was because I wanted to feel some sense of power, right? And the drugs just like helped me escape. And like, I didn't have to, like my life, like I never got raped. My mom never relapsed. Nothing ever happened. I was cool. I was happy. Like, but on the inside I was dying. on the inside, I was dying. And I don't know. It's, I've never really talked about this before.
I mean, your picturesque, like picture perfect home life got flipped on its head in the same year, you know, with a personal traumatic experience. And then, you know, watching, you know, that stable figure, you know, with your mom, then going back, because you hadn't seen her in an addictive state before that, had
no,
you?
Never.
Yeah, and
never.
That's a lot to go through. And so you'd already knew, you're like, oh, well, drugs, I like that, I want this. And it's like, you know, I don't want what I just went through. Right. I don't want what I'm feeling. So, right. Like, take me back to that thing that feels good.
Right, exactly. Exactly. And I think I also, something that I felt a lot of shame and guilt about is I got my brother into smoking. So I have a little brother. I love him so much. I love him so much. He's my, he has my whole heart. I got him into smoking. And so then a common theme throughout like my active addiction was getting other people to do the same drugs that I was doing. So I wasn't alone, you know, and then they would be on them like in a way that I thought was harder. I would convince myself that they were doing more than I was, or they were smoking more, they were doing more coke, or they were drinking more so that I'm not the problem. You know what I mean? And
that out there.
Right. And this is a really long answer to your question.
It's part of your story.
So fast forward, the court case is finished. And I was maybe like 16 and a half, 17 when the court case got finished. I met like one going to be like my best friend for a really long time. We started doing a lot of drugs together. Me and my brother were smoking together. And I got into my first like real relationship. I'm going to put air quotes about it because that's...
I love everything about how you just described that. Yeah. The facial expression, the air quotes, the voice tone.
David?
Yeah.
Shout out David.
Yeah. Why would you... Don't do that. Don't do that. Anyways. It just got awkward. Anyways. Yeah, I get into a relationship with this person. We were doing drugs together. We were partying together. And I became like one of the bros. And that was like, a common theme also is like, I have a lot of different identities before I got sober. I was one of the bros. I was the girl that got raped multiple times. I was the daughter of two drug addicts and alcoholics. I was this, I was that, but I was never Peyton. If that makes sense. I don't know if that makes sense, but like, so anyways, I got into a relationship with this person and it went downhill really, really fast. And on my graduation night, when I graduated high school, we had been on and off for a while. And I was like, I really want you to be at my graduation, da, 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 da. And he wasn't going to come. And then he was coming. And then I was late to my graduation. And so after that, on my graduation night, I went and got really drunk and really high with some friends. And then he called me and he was like, you're cheating on me, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on? Mm-hmm. And so my drunk ass goes to go pick this man up and he was obliterated out of his mind and he thinks I'm cheating on him. Long story short, we basically almost like die in the car because I'm driving, he's trying to take this wheel from me and stuff like that. So that was like my first real traumatic experience and drugs were the reason why. Does that make sense? Like, just to like paint the picture. That same night, my brother was also really drunk and my dad had to come rescue my brother and then my dad had to come rescue me. This guy almost totaled my car and it was just like a whole thing. And then after that, I moved down to Florida.
Oh, God.
For a little while.
Mistake number one.
Mistake number 500 billion thousand, first of all.
We have to all have to have geographic, right?
Yeah, right?
Mm-hmm. If I get away from them, I'll be okay.
You know, right, exactly. But the problem just follows you. And it's so crazy because until I got sober, I didn't realize that that's what I was doing. I didn't realize that I was making the geographical change because I was so discontent with who I was as a person and like what was going on in my life that I needed something different. Mm-hmm. So I moved down to Florida. I move in with this person and I'm not going to go into a lot of detail, but like, it was just weird, man. It was just weird. And like, while I'm down there, I'm like on all these dating apps, right? And like, I'm drinking. And mind you, at this time I was 17. Mm-hmm. I wasn't even 18 yet. So I was drinking, I was smoking, all the things. And I got on these dating apps and stuff like that. And I was like going out on multiple dates all the time, like blah, 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 blah. But I was also still seeing this person back in Georgia. Okay.
The one who accused you of cheating on
him? Yeah, the one who, yes, that one.
Oh, you're like, I wasn't before.
I
wasn't
before, but I am now. Since you want to fuck my car up in my life, I'm going to move away, but I'm going to still be with you because I probably still love you.
Just, this whole tone is still just very relatable.
That's all the inner thoughts inside my head, just in case anyone that's watching is wondering.
Nobody needs Inside Out.
And nobody needs Inside Out because all my feelings are on the outside looking in. Anyways, so this dude, so I'm like, I'm going to go see my man. I'm going to drive back to Georgia and I'm going to go see my man. And so I drive back to Georgia on a whim and I go spend the night with him. And unbeknownst to me, my cousin uncle was with, I have to, because it's funny now. my cousin uncle was on the phone talking to my parents, like, this girl's got a problem. She's addicted to men. Like, blah, you need to get her in rehab. Blase, blase, blase. So I come home. My dad's like, you need to come home now. And I'm like, no. So I wait a couple hours and then I go home. Mind you, I never talk about this, but I ran away from home multiple times in my childhood. Because I was just had to be the center of attention at all times. And anytime I didn't get what I want, I was going to get what I want. It was going to be because I ran away. So that's important for in just a second. I get home. My cousin uncle's on the phone. And he's like, you need to, like, he's basically like spilling all the beans about how I've been going out on dates. I've been drinking. I've been smoking and blah, 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 blah. And they're like, we're bringing you to rehab. Like a trauma rehab center. And I'm like, no, I'm not. So I ran away. And I got to like the top of the street and I was like, what am I gonna do? Like, I literally had no options. I had no money. I had absolutely nothing. I drove here from Florida. All my things are in Florida because I was living there at the time. And so I kind of, I just like came back in and then I was like, all right, I guess this is what's gonna happen. And my dad and I drove down there. This was the summer of
2018.
No, I graduated in 2019. I think this is the summer of 2019. I'd only lived in Florida for like a month.
So when you were 15, so you would have been what?
2016. She was born in 2001.
So this is 2 years into.
Yeah, in 2019, when I went to when I went to my first rehab, I was.
I don't think that was your first rehab, 18. Honey. You went to that place by the
ocean.
That
was a mental hospital, though.
Yeah.
Because I was trying to...
Same jokes around my dad. He gives me the same face. And that's why I'm like... So, Jack, up to this point, you know, it's 2 years watching Peyton kind of spiral down into a really dark place. Like, what are you aware of? What are you trying... Are you trying to intervene? Are you just letting it happen? What's going on in your head and in your world?
Good question. I knew I tried to help her, but I know from experience you can't help somebody who doesn't want help. So I sucked it up and endured it and did what I could as much as I could, you know, with her mother's help, of course. But I did a lot of praying and a lot of sleepless nights. Hmm. A lot of praying and a lot of sleepless nights. And trying to help in the way that I do and going to Al-Anon meetings.
You went to Al-Anon meetings? No shit. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's pretty radical.
Yeah. Well, you weren't the only one in the house that I was trying to.
You had it on both fronts. Mm-hmm. Wife and daughter.
Yeah. I don't really want to talk much about that side of it. But that's yeah, okay. That was that was my reality for a while.
It was during that time, our whole entire family was in shambles. My brother was like lighting things on fire in the driveway, and
this was in the driveway.
Yeah.
No, it was in his bedroom.
It was in his bedroom.
Oh, never mind.
And he was like stabbing things, and like, he,
Well, let's get back to you're going to the trauma informed rehab.
Yes.
So now we're 2 years into your spiral, and now it's your first attempt at help, but you don't necessarily want it.
Technically, it was like my second attempt, because when I was slitting my wrist before, I was like, I need help now. I need help. I need help. You know? And then they took me somewhere, and then that was freaking terrible. I had some girl. It was just really, I was really freaking weird. I would not recommend the mental hospital. I mean, I guess I would if you really, I mean,
grippy sock vacation.
I mean, grippy sock vacation.
But this drug time, related.
To me, it wasn't drug related. To me, I was like, I'm not a drug addict. I don't have a problem with drugs. I had zero intention of getting sober. I did not want to be sober whatsoever at all. And even while I was in that place, I was like, yeah, I'm going to smoke weed after this. Like, I was under the impression, like, in my brain that I was there because I had been raped multiple times because of all the family trauma that was going on, because my mom was still in active addiction, because all the stuff that was going, like, it had nothing to do with drugs for me at all. Because of men and all the things. Right. So for me, it was like...
Yeah, if your life was like mine, you'd do what I do.
Yeah, that's pretty much how it was.
I think, like, the self-harm was just the last straw.
Yeah.
When you came to... I remember you coming into our bedroom and talking and admitting to that and showing us what was going on, and that you and I were gone the next day.
Yeah, that was the first time.
The first time. And the second time when you went for... I don't know why you went there, I guess... Why did you go to the guest house? What was the premise there?
Because cousin uncle called you and was like, she's got a problem with men, and she's been going out on these dates, and she's got a problem with, like, drinking and smoking and stuff like that. Like, so I was there for 60 days, and it was more so like a trauma based thing. We went to meetings and stuff like that, and it, like, I talked about my drug use and stuff like that, but it was not like on the forefront of everything. It was more so everything that I had going on with men, and like this need to have power, this need to control my life, this need for everything, basically.
Yeah.
If I could jump in here, that's a really good program. It's called the Guest House in Ocala, Florida.
Oh yeah.
And it's a trauma treatment center. It's a trauma camp.
Trauma camp.
Trauma camp. Right? we have that in common. But
your laugh?
Well, yeah.
Did we have the same laugh?
It was very similar.
Really?
It was like an echo.
No,
God has spoken again.
God is
you are
you?
The Father.
Oh.
No, I want to plug it because it's a good program. It's they say they treat trauma and addiction, and I suppose they do a little bit with addiction. I wasn't impressed with that at all, but it's a trauma treatment center, and a phenomenal program. It's the sister program of the place. I went to the Refuge in Ocala, Florida, which was started by the same person who started the guest house, Judy Carnes, which is a phenomenal therapist and is just great. I ended up, but that's another story. Yeah. We're not talking about that. I don't know where we were.
The guest house.
Yeah, you went to the guest house primarily for trauma and emotional mental well-being.
Yes, yes.
As opposed to drug and alcohol.
Yes. So did you have, like, because I know, like, any kind of recovery, like, willingness is a huge piece of it, whether it be trauma recovery, you know, willingness to look at what happened, and then addiction recovery. So you were just like, I don't know where else to go, and they told me I need to go here.
I did it because I didn't have another choice.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, it was like... It was like, you have to do this. You have to go to this place.
So what was the... Because you got sober at 22, right?
Yeah. I got sober at 21 and turned 22 in rehab.
So what was that? What was that final thing where you were like, no, like, this has to stop now?
I had been renting a house in Kennesaw with my bestie girl, who's like my sister, and... We were like throwing massive rager parties, and I realized that I was the only one that was like continuously like wanting to party all the time. And like, I would go out during the week and stuff like that. And I would like do things for drugs that I shouldn't have been doing. And I first, like, my rock bottom was like an emotional rock bottom. Mm-hmm. I never overdosed. I never went to jail or anything like that. I just got to a point where I was on the phone with an ex-boyfriend. And he was calling me a whore and a slut and like all these things and completely like demeaning me and all of that. And I was like, holy, this is what my life has come to. Mm-hmm. Like I'm literally in, like I'm making a budget and putting miscellaneous items like in my budget for drugs and alcohol right now.
I did that too. I called really? It miscellaneous.
Did you really?
Oh my God.
My brother helped me make it. He goes, what is this miscellaneous stuff? I said, it's just miscellaneous.
It's just miscellaneous.
And he's like, we have to get rid of it. I go, mm-mm.
And even if you get rid of it, I'm still going to find the money to make all my dreams come true.
I love that. Truly never a, never a unique experience.
No, never. It never were. Amen.
So you got the miscellaneous items yes. In your budget.
In my budget. And I'm like, there was one time like I had gone to work and like this is like when my rock bottom started. I had gone to work and I invited all of my friends to my New Year's Eve party that I was having at my house. And I got so messed up. I don't remember anything. And I was wearing like minimal to no clothing, which is like not who I really am at the core. And I was so messed up and like everybody from my work was there. Mm-hmm. And I remember going back into work and I was like, I was so embarrassed. I was so embarrassed. And people were talking about it and like making jokes about it. And I remember I was like laughing along with the jokes, like, this is so funny. But in reality, I'm like, I'm so embarrassed.
Yeah.
I want to crawl into a hole because what is my life right now? And then the night that my ex-boyfriend called me all that stuff, like I said, you know what? I'm done. So I did all the rest of my drugs, almost all the rest of my drugs. I had to save some. Obviously, a true drug addict, you know, would have some to save for last. And I drank a bunch and I called my dad. And I said, I need help. I said, I'm done. I can't do this anymore. What was that like for you when I called you?
You're taking my job right from me.
Sorry. I'm sorry. I'm curious.
What was that like for me? It was a proud, a grateful moment and a big sigh.
Were you
scared? Huge sigh. No, for the first time I wasn't. I've been pins and needles since you were whatever. You know, the 60 days you spent at the guest house, those are 60 days that I slept pretty well for the first time in many years. Because I knew you were safe, right? And I knew Jack was still at the house and I had... I'm going to say control is not the right word, but I had a good idea where he was at. You know, that was my big thing is that, is everybody in the house? Is everybody safe? Right. Is you know, so that was relief, you know, and joy. I'm celebrating. And then after that initial reaction, it started getting exciting. Like, man, she could actually be in recovery. Right. And we got this, you know, we could talk about these things. We'll go here and we'll go here. And we'll do, like, I'm just spinning it with it, you know, in projecting, right. Going out in the future tripping, but it good stuff, you know, and it's like, okay, reel it back one day at a time. Right. One day at a time. But that, yeah, it was relief is what it was.
And I think that night we went to a meeting, right. Or no.
You had one more run in you.
Yeah. Okay. So, that night, I also slit my wrists again for the first time in a really, really long time. That's also how I knew it was like my rock bottom. Because mm-hmm. I knew that the drugs and the alcohol were going to kill me or I was going to kill myself. Yeah. And like, if I'm being completely honest, I did not really want to die. Like, I didn't.
Oh, so you did it horizontally.
Yeah, I did it horizontally, not vertically. Yeah, I wasn't that much of a badass. I was kind of a pussy.
So that's a mental illness humor.
Yeah, you're supposed to laugh right now.
was that authentic?
That was not sufficient.
That was not sufficient? Okay, can you repeat the question, please?
I don't know.
So you had your one more run.
Yeah, so I had my one more run that night. I went to bed. I went to work the next morning. And then that night, my dad and I went to a meeting. And then my dad made me flush all my stuff. And he thought he did. But I still had more hidden. I know, right? You're so stupid, man. You should have known.
Well, what was I going to do? No, that's not all of it. No, it is, Dad. I swear. What am I going to go through your whole house looking for it?
I mean, I guess that's valid. Yeah. Because I definitely would have said no and I would have cried.
You would have
cried. Daddy, I'm so sorry. I promise this is it.
Yes. And I would have believed you.
Just like every single time.
Right.
Man, he would come around. He'd be like, it's time for the bell, like to get a whooping, right? Because I was a really bad kid. I misbehaved a lot. I talked back a lot. And I swear. I'm such a daddy's girl. I would come up to him and my mom would be like, Peyton Barbara Bears, you are getting whooped. And I'd be like, okay. And then I go to my daddy and he would like do it. He would do it one time. And then I'd be like, I love you so much. Like, I know you don't want to do this to me. And I manipulate him. I mean, I was manipulating him from the jump. since I was a jit, bro. I was manipulating you. And you fell for it every time. So wonderful.
I didn't know they gave out that badge in Girl Scouts. That's
father manipulation.
Manipulation of father.
It's your gold badge.
Yeah, right? I definitely got a couple of those. Anyways, so then we, like, I was like, well, I need to have a drink. So me, my mom, and my dad, at this point, my mom and my dad were divorced. And we met up for at this restaurant. And I was like, well, I'm going to have a drink. They were like, no, you're not. And I said, yes, I was, because I was paying for it. So I got really, really drunk in the parking lot. And I'm standing in the parking lot of this restaurant in broad daylight at like 5 p.m. on a weeknight. And my mom and dad are like holding two sides of my hair. And I'm throwing up everywhere. And like, I remember in that moment, I was like, I'm done. This is it. Like, I don't ever want to feel the way that I'm feeling right now. I was ashamed. I was embarrassed. I was broken. It's so hard to like put into emotions. Cause I remember like they both said to me, is this how you want your life to look? Is this where you want to be? You like, you did this to yourself. And that's honestly exactly what I needed to hear, because I needed someone to slap me in the face and be like, this is your fault. This is your fault. Like all, everything is like of my own making, right? Like I did this to myself.
Wow.
You know what I mean? Like I was in that moment by my own will. No one forced me to drink. No one forced me to do drugs. No one forced me to do anything. I chose to do it all. Call it yes, I have like the mental like malady and stuff like that, but like I still chose to do it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I'm going to jump in here. Cause it, first of all, our stories parallel is scary. How much we were alike. Obviously, if you haven't seen that, we're very much alike, but her using history was much like mine. When I didn't know, you just expressed what that was like, that, hey, that was my realization when I went to what I hope is my last detox. As I sat there with everything I owned and I realized that it was all my doing. Mm. It was my doing. It wasn't my mother's suicide and my mother didn't love me and my dad wasn't there and all these victim mentality excuses that I had made up for being who I was. Right. It was me. And that was the huge realization for me.
It's scary. It's a scary realization.
It's a scary realization. And thank God for it, though, because there's nowhere else to turn, right? I am the problem. There's nobody else to blame. So the solution has got to be my responsibility.
Right.
And I didn't, that's interesting. You never shared that with me. But you know, something else, and you were talking about that you were throwing up in the parking lot, and it wasn't like you had that much to drink that night. No, that was the cumulative of the last, whatever, 3 or 4 days, because you were on a Coke run.
Yeah,
if I remember correctly, you're on a Coke run. And not eating, and she was a wreck, man. I
looked really, really bad.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, it was bad. It's so funny. People today, they're like, you don't look like a drug addict. I'm like, yeah, because I'm sober. Before, like, dude, I don't even understand, like, how people didn't know. It was really, really bad. I was small. I constantly had, like, the red marks right here. My face was breaking out. Really, I was. Mm-hmm.
I know, like, for me, like, in sobriety, getting to that point where I would meet new people and they would learn a story from my past and they'd be like, no, not you.
Yeah.
Like, that was like the whole, am I actually sober now?
Right. You're like,
my past is unbelievable.
Why don't you sit down? Would you like some tea? Yeah. Right.
I think this is important to mention for anybody who's out there and has kids, that I didn't know that you were doing what you were doing for a long time because you were pretty, You had good grades. You had good grades and you behaved. You were kind of a ruly child when you were younger, but as you got a little bit better, it wasn't out of hand, but there was no reason to believe, based on your academics, right? And cheer and stuff like that, there was no reason to believe that you were doing anything. So it's not that I turned a blind eye. I didn't see any reason to be concerned.
And that's true because I made it that way.
Yeah, I'm sure it was purposeful. Yeah, as long as I keep up this front right here, they won't question it over here. And that's a classic, right?
Yeah.
And I think that all parents, parents that have kids that, you know, are of whatever age, they need to pry. Pry. Don't be a helicopter parent, but pry. Ask questions. Who are the friends that they're hanging out with? Where are they going? Have you met them? She said, you can sleep over here. Have you met those people? Because that's what I did. I want to talk to their parents. You know, I would do that for the longest time. But as long as there's a good enough facade out there, there's no reason to be suspicious. Their grades are good. I know you had mono your senior year, was it? And she got way behind. You missed like 2 months of work.
Yeah, but I still graduated with 3.85 GPA.
But when she got, well, she came home and she hit the books and she grinded it out and she ended up with a 3.8 GPA after missing 2 months. I mean, she just, she stuck to it. And so I'm looking back and saying, she's determined, right? She's disciplined. She's doing what she's supposed to do. There's no reason to believe. Does that make sense? There's no reason to believe that there's something bad going on.
Yeah, right. No, I'm glad you brought that up, you know, because we know that, you know, we can't help someone who doesn't want help. And then, of course, if that person isn't even showing signs that they even might need help, I mean, looking back, is there anything that either one of you would have done different or anything you wish your parents would have done different?
No, I wouldn't change anything. I wouldn't change anything. Like I said earlier, like I'm 120% grateful. I feel like I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be in my life. Like I'm fulfilling like my higher power's purpose for me. I'm where I'm supposed to be.
Well, what about then for the other Jack that's watching this show who has 15-year-old Peyton at home and might be aware that this is going on, but he doesn't know, like, so if you could go back to how you were at 15, who you were at 15 when you were starting down this path, was there any way that you could have been redirected, do you think? What advice would you give the next person of how to help?
Good question, dude. I think kind of like what my dad said, maybe like more questions, be more involved. Like, I think a lot of it, in at least in my experience, in my life, was that there was so much going on in my family with everybody, you know, that no one was getting one certain amount of attention. Like, and no one was really getting attention. Everything was all jumbled up. You know what I'm saying? So I was able to fly under the radar. Do not let your child fly under the radar. Allow, like hold space for your child, hold space for like those emotions, hold space for everything that's going on, like ask the questions, you know, be as involved in your child's life as you can, you know, and then if your child doesn't want you to, then tell them why. Like, hey, like, you know, I just want to make sure that you're going to be okay.
Yeah. You know,
my parents, like when I got sober, I moved in with my mom, and my grandma, they tracked my location. I hated it, but I understood. Track your freaking children's location, figure out where they're going. Like do everything that you can to be as involved in your children's life as you can without being like not allowing your children to have any experiences. Cause I think there's a fine line there, but I don't know. It's hard because I'm a drug addict, you know, like I was going to figure out how to do whatever I wanted to do regardless of what it took. And that's exactly what I did, you know? So it's hard. I think that's my answer.
Okay. So it boiled down to with all of the chaos at home, your chaos was able to go and it just blended in.
Yeah, my chaos just blended in. Like, everyone else was having so much chaos and worried about themselves and trying to worry about everybody else, but they were so involved in like themselves and stuff like that, that there was no way I could get away with whatever I wanted. I mean, at one point me and my brother were smoking inside the house and they had no idea.
See, I remember when I was in middle school, my brother was in high school, and we shared a bathroom. It was a Jack and Jill style bathroom.
I'm so obvious.
You could only access it from either of our bedrooms. You could not get to it through the hallway. And I was a good kid, but I've never been a snitch. That's not who I am. And I walk into the bathroom one night, and loud enough for my brother to hear, but nobody else in the house to hear, I go, "Wow, smells like smoke in here," and then walked out as a cue to him being like, "I know what you did in here. Mom and Dad will know what you did in here. Don't do that in here."
Yes. Don't do that in here. Get it together.
And then I'm the one that became the addict. I was like, wait a minute.
Funny how that works out, isn't it?
Oh my God. Ended up hiding my drugs from that same brother when I lived with him.
Yes, probably in the Jack and Jill bathroom. I'm just kidding.
But, you know, at this point in where you are, you know, being a young person in recovery, which is not an easy, that is not an easy experience. Being a woman and being young is not an easy thing for, I was going to say for anyone, but not everyone is a young woman.
I'm glad you got yourself there because I wouldn't have caught it.
Is there a piece of advice that you would give to young women in recovery? Or young women seeking recovery but scared?
Um, find your people, man. Find your people. When I first came, surround yourself with the people that you want to be like. Surround yourself with the people that have good energy, the people that you know, like, have things that you want. All my friends today, like, they have things that I want. That's why I surround myself with them. I think... It's kind of a hard question, to be honest, because I absolutely love my life today. I would not trade it for the world, ever. There were times where I felt like, oh my gosh, like, I'm 23 and I don't party and I don't drink and I don't do anything. Like, this is weird, you know, because all my friends from, like, my previous, I call it my previous life, because me sober is a completely different person.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah,
they're out, like, getting their life together and or either getting their life together or partying, one or the other. And I always joke that me getting sober, like, I, like, lost a couple years of my life. So I'm just now 23. I just got accepted to college. I now am going towards my career. Like, I'm now starting my life. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So it's, I think my biggest piece of advice is, like, if you're scared, hold on to that. Hold on to that fear, because that is what will help you get the help that you need and that you deserve. You know, if I wasn't scared, I wouldn't be sitting in this seat. You know, if I wasn't scared in the beginning, I mean. And now, like, being, like, the program that I choose to use, I am heavily involved. I'm constantly helping other women in sobriety. And I'm constantly being truthful and sharing my experience, my strength, and my hope, and when and wherever I can, trying to be of service to other people as much as I can. Like, I'm trying to be as involved as I can all the time, because that's how I keep what I have, is by giving it away to other people. Mm-hmm. And I think that's so freaking beautiful. Like, we were just having a conversation before this about, like, it's hard being a woman in recovery, because there's not a lot, like, trusting women is hard, I think, and in my experience, and I know your experience too, because we had a conversation about it. But, like, I've found it easier now that I'm in recovery, because the people that I choose to surround myself with, right? Prayer is a ginormous part about my life. My high power is, I choose to call God today, and that's who I lean on for everything, you know? And I try to stay as much out of ego and pride as I can. Mm-hmm. And just, dude, to have fun, man. Mm-hmm. Like, when I got sober, I thought I was never gonna have fun again. Mm-hmm. I have more fun now, because I can remember anything. Dude, I just went out to the freaking bars, bro, sober. Like, because I love to party. I love to dance. I love to.
Oh, you just enjoyed that?
Dude, yes.
I had the opposite experience.
Did you really? So many people say that. Dude, it was like, I'm sitting there with one of my girlfriends, and we're just, like, dancing our ass off. And it was so much freaking fun. And I'm, like, watching these people drunk off their ass. And I'm like, you know, like, not like making fun of, but being like, that used to be me. And I'm glad I'm not there today.
See, I just, when I go to the bars and I'm, like, around drunk people, I'm like, this is why I don't do
partake.
This. I'm like, you guys are the most annoying creatures I have ever come across with, and I hope I never meet you again. Maybe I'll see you in a meeting.
Then I need to go home. You said maybe I'll see you in a meeting. I mean, you probably might. Let's be honest.
But what about for you, Jack? Would there be a further piece of advice you would give, maybe to a young person seeking recovery, or to the parent with a child who needs recovery? What would you say to them?
Well, that's a whole bunch. Let me see if I can unpack that.
We're the same person. I swear we're the same person.
You know, I can't help, and this is going to help, this doesn't come out the wrong way, but how many years did you see me sober, bringing guys in and out of the house? How many guys have I?
My whole life.
Right. You know what I mean?
There's always been an open door policy.
So she saw an example of what really works, right? And she just doing exactly, I do the same thing she does today after 30 years. I do the same thing. I hang out with the right people. You know what I mean? In the beginning, especially. Mm-hmm. And especially, if I want to be a carpenter, I don't go around and hang out with a plumber. You know what I mean? I didn't know what I was getting into this journey. And somebody said, find the winners and hang with them. So I went to the people that had considerable amount of long-term recovery. And when I went out with them, I went up for fellowship with them. I listened to them. I asked questions. I always gravitated towards people that had a great deal of time that were attractive to me. They had the light in their eyes, right? They were just on fire with this thing. That's very attractive to me. Because I too, you know, there was a part of me that says, oh, it's going to be boring. Because I came in here, I came in here once before. What I came in here once before, and all I heard was, "You can't drink, you can't use drugs the rest of your life." That's the only message that I heard, and that was not going to happen. Mm-hmm. That sounds very boring, but when I came in here and I surrendered to a whole new discipline, I found something completely different. And I had fun. As far as the you know, I just hang out with those people, you know, those, and now I'm, you know, now I'm that guy. It's funny how things change, but,
now you're Peyton's dad.
I'm sorry.
I said, and now you're Peyton's dad.
And now, yeah. So well, Peyton was, I don't know, 4 or 5 months sober.
Not even that.
She called me up crying one night. This is not fair. I don't have an identity. I'm just Jack's daughter, dude, you know, and she,
because everybody,
I'm not gonna find it, nobody knows,
bro.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm pretty active in the community, you know, and she got bent out of shape, and now, you know, fast forward 8-9 months and I meet new people and I go, oh, you're Peyton's dad.
Welcome to being the accessory,
right?
Yeah.
Well, and it's awesome, right? It's awesome because she was worried about her identity, right? And that's what you said. I thought, I want to be my own woman. I want to be my own person in this deal. And I said, you know, you will be. Just keep doing it. It'll be fine. And sure enough, you know, she's like a firecracker everywhere I go. Oh, you're Peyton's dad. Man, I just saw her here and here, you know, and they're just going on and on and whatever. But so it's all good. I don't know if I even qualified to answer the question. What advice to give parents that have kids that are early new in recovery?
Yeah,
was that the question?
I guess, because I know you said, like, for the younger kids, you know, be more involved in their lives, know more about, you know, mm-hmm. where they're going, who they're with, like, who are these people actually? But what about where those parents feel like they are involved, that they do know those questions, but mm-hmm. still feel helpless?
Yeah, I would say reach out. There's all kinds of support groups. Al-Anon Family Groups is a phenomenal place to go. And if you search long enough, you'll find a place where you fit at home there, and you'll hear other people's experiences. You know, I was thinking about this the other day. The essence of what we have here is really the basics of humanity, and that's communication.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It's just communication, yes. Right? She feels all alone and different. Just like your story was mine. I felt different. I felt odd compared to everybody else. And I didn't really ever, my home life wasn't that good, but there was no reason for me to, I just felt different. And alcohol and drugs were the solution. So I hung out with people whose solution was alcohol and drugs. And I felt at home with them. And then as it progressed, I sought out people that partied as hard or harder than me, so I could stand next to them and say, well, I'm not that bad. You know, at least I'm not that bad. You know, you fast forward how many years and I'm shooting dope. I'm homeless. I'm dying of a disease I swear I was never going to have. And there's nobody else that's as bad as me anymore. But that's a tangent, excuse me. Be involved, ask questions. And maybe I'm speaking out of turn. As a parent, it's not my job to be my kid's friend. That is not my job.
I agree with that.
That is not my job. And I see that a lot. People that are too concerned about hurting their feelings, right? Or too concerned about them liking them as a parent. That's not my job as a parent. That's not my job as a parent. And if we can end up, as they get older and they mature, because I've hopefully done a good job with God's help, having a good relationship, that's a winner, you know? And that's where we're at right now. But it's not my job for her to like me. I want her to. Yeah, absolutely. I'm a human being, but that's not my job. And I've got to keep that line absolutely clear, crystal clear and straight. Mm. It's not my job. It's my job to say, this is wrong. This is what's right. And discipline is needed, you know, appropriately. And I think I did a pretty good job of that. I just, you know, did the best that I could anyway. I did the best I could, but it's not my job to be her friend. And I mean, there's 5 years of my life that was absolute hell. From 2014 to 2019, 2020 was bad. And one of the worst things that happened is that in your disease, and I understand that she chose her abusive boyfriend over her dad, verbally and physically.
Twice.
Yeah.
Two different people.
And this is the apple of my life. If you haven't figured that out, this is my reason for being. I mean, this is my baby. This is my baby girl, right? And that crushed me. On top of the rest of the stuff that was going on, that absolutely crushed me. And I could not see past that. I couldn't see that ever changing. And I went to my mentor with it on numerous occasions, a lot of tears. And he just said, you just keep doing the right thing. Just keep doing the right thing, toe the line, and have faith that it'll come around. And it did. And
well, before we close, Jack, how are you feeling now, having heard pieces of your daughter's story that you didn't know before tonight?
There wasn't a lot that I haven't already heard. How do I feel like right now? You know, I'm hopeful and I'm grateful. We were talking on the way over here and listening to our song.
Our song is "With Arms Wide Open" by Creed. And we change he to she. He said that to me when I was born.
And I'm going to cry. I don't know if I can.
Let it out.
I was in the shower when her mom came home and I was listening to Arms Wide Open by Creed. And I came out of the shower and her mom came up to me and says, "You're going to be a dad." So.
You're lying.
So that's our song.
I love that.
And when I was in the deepest parts of my addiction, I listened to that song on repeat over and over and over again.
See, but that's true for a lot of people.
Yeah, that's true.
Over and over, we listened to that song.
Yeah, that's true.
But you know, what we were talking about is we put that on, and we're so in sync. It's scary sometimes. We both were feeling exactly the same thing. Like I can't believe where we're at and what we have. And she put that on, and like 10 seconds into it, I started choking up, and I listened to her and she started crying, saying the same thing. And you know, it's almost, you know, and this is typical of people that have experienced with trauma, is that it's not going to end. This is not real. Don't acknowledge it for what it is, because it's going to go away. If you love them, if you care about them, they will leave you or they will die. Mm. Right. We know that, you know what I mean? And I've been in doing this for a long time, but that's the thought. And I have to confess that most of the time it doesn't even seem real, but it is. And slowly it's sinking in. You know what I mean? It's the shoe's not going to drop off, Jack. You know, this is this thing that we get to share together. I'll be honest with you. I kind of feel bad for your mom that she can't share this with you. I'll be honest with you, that she can't share what we have together. I don't know what I've learned other than stick with it and have faith and it'll come back. And I got my daughter back. That's not a fair question, but a good one to close with. I'll give you that. Good job, Sarah.
Well, thank you guys so much for coming on here tonight and being so real and vulnerable with us. It was definitely impactful for me to hear that story, and I'm sure it was impactful for a lot of other people who got to listen tonight. And a big thank you to the sponsors who make this show possible. And as a reminder, we do have the Most High Media app on all of the app stores. And you can listen to this podcast next week when it comes out on the app, and all of our other podcasts are up as well. So thank you again, and until next time.
Thank you.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you.